We will go ahead and begin. So we're called to order officially at 9:31. And now we'll do land acknowledgments. I have a volunteer for the land acknowledgments.
I can do
Thank you, Student Vice Chancellor.
it. Land acknowledgement. We acknowledge that we are on the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramaytush Ohlone, who are the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. As the indigenous stewards of this land, and in accordance with their traditions, the Ramaytush Ohlone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities as the caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their traditional territory. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on their traditional homelands. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytush community, and by affirming their sovereign rights as First Peoples.
Thank you. All right. Now we'll proceed with the roll call.
Heather Brett. Amelia Kong?
Yes.
Jay Langdon?
Present.
Holly Navi Villalobos?
Present.
David Delgado?
Here.
Kara Hall?
Present.
Maria Salazar Colon? Michael Snyder?
Here.
Very brave woman. She informed us she will not be here today. Hi, Jeff, folks. Vivian Marble Jackson.
Here.
Bill Reyes.
Here.
Joyce Coffey.
Here.
Cynthia Dewar.
Here.
Noah Lystrup.
Here.
And Lisa Cooper Wilkins.
Present.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, with the approval of the agenda, now you've gotten that in advance. If there's any recommended changes, otherwise I'll entertain a motion to adopt the agenda as presented.
So moved.
So second. So it's been moved by Council Member Villalobos and seconded by Council Member Fong to adopt the agenda as presented. Any further discussion?
Let me get a suggestion.
Yes.
So we'll put the in the roll call section, maybe we should put people members. There's not a list of members on the agenda. I'm just always used to saying with a list of members on the agenda.
Under the roll call.
That's what doesn't matter.
Okay. Well,
or wherever.
All right. Thank you for that. Any other questions, discussion about the agenda? Yes.
Oh, sorry. I just want to apologize for coming in 5 minutes late and just make sure I get part of my roll call.
Okay.
Also, I think it was mentioned that the board is going to be moving to Diligent. And so I was wondering if we would be as well, and then maybe if the names would end up appearing.
We could talk about that under the procedural piece.
Okay.
Thank you. And there is a presentation on Diligent.
Okay. Okay. So,
thank you for that.
Finally.
Anybody else? Hearing no more comments, we'll proceed with the call vote.
So for the approval of the agenda, Heather Brandt?
Aye.
Amelia Kwong?
Yes.
Jay Landon?
Yes.
Molly Nanley Villalobos?
Aye.
David Delgado?
Aye.
J.R. Hall?
Aye.
Maria Salazar Colon? Michael Snyder? Mary Brabelman? Katja Fuchs?
Aye.
Vivian Marbuda? Bill Reyes?
Aye.
Horace Coffey?
Yes.
Cynthia Dewar?
Yes.
Oh, and nice film.
Yes.
Lisa Cooper.
Yes.
The motion passes.
Great. Now we'll move on to the approval of the September 18th meeting minutes. From the screen. And just that you've received them in advance. So I'll either if the motion for that is presented, or if there's any corrections for additional information.
Approve the minutes.
Second.
This is moved by Council Member Villalobos is seconded by Councilmember Grant to adopt the minutes as presented. Any further discussion? Hands on line either, so we could do a roll call vote.
Heather Brent?
Aye.
Amelia Huang?
Yes.
Landon?
Yes.
Malinali Villalobos?
Aye.
David Delgado?
Aye.
J.R. Hall?
Aye.
Maria Salazar Colon? Michael Snyder?
Yes.
Harry Graveman? Katja Fuchs?
Aye.
Lydia Narumaga?
Yes.
Paul Reyes?
Aye.
Joyce Coughlin?
Yes.
Cynthia Dewar?
Yes.
Paul Meistrup?
Yes.
And Lisa Kubelwalkins?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Right. Okay. So the minutes are adopted. Next item on the agenda is public comment. At this time, we'll entertain public comment on items not on the agenda. Just check in with the world if we received any public comments in the email.
No, we did not.
And if there are any individuals here that would like to make a public comment, or I'm also looking online to see if there is public comment. Oh, yes. Thank you.
I'm just going to repeat my song and dance from last time. I didn't bring printed copies of the job application this time, but we are looking for a credit for prior learning coordinator. So if you work in spaces where there are faculty who would be a great fit for that job, I've sent out the job description a number of times, but if you want it, please don't hesitate to contact me. I'm happy to send you a copy. It is incredibly important work. It is incredibly beneficial to our students because it helps students complete or even start college who might not otherwise have thought to. So I would just like to continue to promote this. The job application is out there. If you know anybody who might be a good candidate, please spread the word. If you have any questions, please ask me. And the deadline for submitting the application is November 3rd. Thank you.
Other public comments. And I'll check one more time online. Not seeing any raised hands. So that concludes public comment. All right. The next item on the agenda is the Chancellor's Report. And unfortunately, Dr. Messina is not on campus at this time and is not going to be giving a Chancellor's Report today. If you have any questions or comments for the chancellor that you would like us to pass on that would inform her report for the next meeting, you're welcome to do so now. You can email the PGC email account. If you're online and want to put something in the chat, that would be fine as well. So with that, we are going to move forward with awards and recognitions and give our council members an opportunity to share updates. And we'll start with Councilman.
Thank you. So at our last Senate business meeting, we heard from Dr. Andrew King, who is the dean overseeing the Rising Scholars Program, who came to present a resolution that was actually passed unanimously by the Associated Student Council about waiving the student health fee for students who are housed in carceral facilities around where we teach classes. And though, of course, it did not need to be done, we felt it important to formally request that Senate leadership lift up and celebrate that work in the spaces around campus where we are able to do so. And so that's what I'm doing here now, is I would like to lift up the work of the Rising Scholars Program and just call attention to it and celebrate it.
Great. Especially since we're right next door to their center. Great. Any other kudos, gratitude, events, award recognition?
Yeah, I just wanted to give kudos to students at City College getting ready for midterms. As entering this building, I don't know if you noticed, there's a lot of students that are already studying and taking spaces wherever there's space. So just wanted to show appreciation, kudos on their continuous work and commitment and resilience. And if you happen to come across students, let them know that you're here to, or remind them that we're here to support students. And if there's ever anything that they need, point them to the right direction, especially when it's hard times with food insecurity and just so many things going on. Thank you.
Thank you. Awards, recognitions, or gratitudes. Anyone online want to share? I will call that synonymous with public comment. There's public, members of the public who'd like to comment. Thank you. We'll move on to our next item. So under the discussion of meetings, protocol, meeting protocols, and procedural meeting modalities. So we already have discussed ad nauseum the new way that we are considering individuals who may join our meetings from other City College sites and what is required in terms of making sure it's added to our agenda in time enough for the 72-hour posting, that we post said agenda physically in the space where the meeting is taking place, including that alternative location, and leave it available for the public to see at the entryway of the building for that full 72-hour period. And that when we do the roll call, that we would acknowledge that the person is at or persons are at that alternative site, and that council members who do that, this does not count against your five just cause absences. So just wanted to reiterate that. We also had it mentioned that we'll be moving to diligent from board docs. So we will have our first overview today of diligent, I believe. And then after this occurs and we are sort of acclimated here, there will be an expectation for standing committees to start to move to the use of diligent as well to provide overall consistency with how our shared governance meetings are posting their agendas and minutes and committee information. So we'll talk more about the schedule for that at a later time. Trying to think if there was anything else at all.
Well, just on that note, I just wanted to add for the transition to diligent, it's going to happen the week of our next PGC meeting. I think it's happening on a Tuesday during that week, so it'll be a little weird because the agenda will be posted on board docs as usual, either on Friday or Monday, and then it'll be shut down on Tuesday. But we'll make sure that the agenda is not only posted outside, but also posted as a PDF on our webpage so that it's constantly, you know, available to the public. And then we'll transition to diligent for, I think, the first meeting in November for PGC. So just a heads up, that'll be that weird like transition period. So.
Sorry, as a part of this agenda item, I'm just wondering if PGC needs a standing item for those attending remotely in accordance with Assembly Bill 2449.
Probably. And we don't have anyone right now who is consistently. But we'd ask that people give us the notice in enough time to at least get it on our agenda. But so I agree with you, then we can have it.
Yes, yeah,
so you can always fill it in.
When someone's going to have just cause or extenuating
circumstances. Yeah, and sort of for the emergencies and the extenuating circumstances, if we get the notice in time enough for the 72 hours, it will go there, but then there will be times where we don't get it, but I hear you. Mm-hmm. So we will definitely, because we have an indicator of our adding it to our agenda. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Okay.
Just something that Associated Students Executive Council is also having that discussion right now. Mm-hmm. potential at least one council representatives instead of coming in person to our Friday meetings, still participating with full rights from their center.
Right.
Their center as well. So that's something that we are exploring right now, and we're in discussion right now to make sure that they those students or those centers have access to
absolutely. And it would be consistent to how their brown eyed groups are thinking too. So thank you for sharing that. Anything else under meeting protocols and modalities? All right. Any public comment on this item? Not seeing any hands raised. No one here has raised their hand. So let's move on to item B, which is the second read and endorsement, ideally, of our student equity plan. We have Dr. Tessa Henderson here.
So thank you for putting the item back on the agenda for the second read and endorsement. And I'm here to seek your endorsement for the equity plan for 25 to 28.
So moved.
Seconded.
All right. It's been moved by Councilmember Snyder and seconded by Councilmember Kong that we recommend and endorse the student equity plan move forward to the chancellor. So that it makes its way to the board. Any other discussion, questions, comments about the equity? I will comment that I have been very impressed, as I always am, with the collaborative work that Dr. Tessa Henderson Brown leads in the crafting of the equity plan. I know that it has been throughout the district already getting comments and feedback in addition to all the folks who contributed to crafting it. So just really, you know, pleased at the commitment that the district continues to work to make to elevate equity work here at the college, but especially appreciative of your leadership and all this work. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. So there are no other comments or questions. Are we ready to move to a roll call vote? Oh, I'm sorry. Should I ask for public comment first? That was great. All right. And I'm not seeing any public comment. Okay. Now we.
Heather Brain.
Hi.
Amelia Kongf.
Yes.
Jay Landon.
Yes.
Malinali Villalobos.
Hi.
David Delgado.
Hi.
J.R. Hall.
Hi.
Maria Salazar Pavon. Michael Snyder.
Yes.
Harry Brabelman. Katja Fuchs.
Aye.
Lillian Marrow Duck.
Yes.
Joel Reyes.
Aye.
Joyce Hogg.
Yes.
Cynthia Dewar.
Yes.
Noah Leistrup.
Yes.
And Lisa Kubalukis.
Yes.
The motion passes.
All right. Well, thanks again. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the
night. But thank you again.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to go on to new business. And we do have BP 5.27. I don't know that Andrew is here yet, though. So we may need to back to this item when Ian King is here to lead the discussion on it. So let's go on to the first read of Chapter 1 for Board Policy Revisions, and ABC Kristen Charles is here.
Thank you. Is it possible for me to project? I said there's a way.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Are you on the mic now?
Not to be in the same direction. That would make sense. I was thinking there was some magic way I could just somehow connect to that screen. Because why not? You should be there soon. Maybe.
Yeah, it's
I'll get there. I'm sorry. Don't tell me. Just going to prove. When you
Recording in progress.
Wait 1 second while I make your panelists. So
I think I just did it.
Cool. Oh,
yeah. There we go. All right. Don't be weird. Feedback.
Well, thank you. I am here to share with you changes to our Chapter 1 board policies. Last year, as part of the board's work to continuously improve, in particular because of our accreditation sanction, there were actually two different work groups, one of which was focused on an ad hoc committee on policies. And during the course of last year, they made some revisions for clarity to our board policies, because one of the concerns, as you may recall, was that our board wasn't always following its board policies. In reviewing the board policies, it became clear that they weren't always clear, the policies themselves. So some of the, really these changes are all with that intent to clarify. And so while they didn't make changes to all of the board policies in Chapter 1, there's some global changes that I've made. For example, you see this here, reference, instead of legal authority, it now says references. Those were changes that I added after the fact. I've also added some changes around government code sections to be in line with CCLC, as well as changes to accreditation references, because all of these board policies still were referring to the 2014 standards. We now have 2024 accreditation standards. But the rest of the changes in the content of the policies were those made by the board. And so we're bringing this through for participatory governance review. And then it will go back to the board once you've had a chance to review and at your next meeting, hopefully recommend these changes. I did get some feedback from the Administrators Association. So you can see, for example, let's see. Make sure I'm in the right policy. Yeah, 1.09. To move this out of the way. Okay, so here you can say, you can see here that there was a suggestion to move this sentence below the next paragraph for flow. This is not on the copy that you have because these changes came in after I sent it out for constituent review. And then there was a sentence that was effectively redundant with an earlier sentence. So that's what you're seeing here. Maybe if I make it a little smaller, you can kind of see. So that sentence there that's highlighted right now was redundant with this little sentence paragraph, mini paragraph here. And then finally, one of the things that was also pointed out is that the administrative procedures probably need to be refreshed as well for this particular board policy, because the administrative procedures, speaking of posting physical copies of the agenda, it still says that they're posted in Conlon Hall, which, you know, we remember talking about with you and others. So we need to change that. So I think what I would like to do is bring the AP to the next PGC meeting with those changes. I'd like for these all to move forward at that time. I can circulate to you all ahead of time. And then I think that might be it for the changes that warranted comments. There was just, this is miss this particular reference to board policy 1.11 should be board policy 1.12. Otherwise, it's self-referential because this is board policy 1.11 that this is appearing in. So really some great eagle eyes out there who caught these changes. There were some little edits that I just went ahead and made. You know, typos I figured don't need to be reviewed. So I don't know if you've had a chance. I hope you've had a chance to look through this. I did make sure I sent it out knowing it was a really big chunk of material to look through. But if you have any questions, happy to answer them, or concerns, additional input. Okay.
the part where it says president, should it say like whoever's running the meeting? Some case it's not the president.
Thank you.
President or designee.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Sometimes it's the vice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then if they're both not there, I don't know.
It could be someone else, right? Yeah, so designate what president or designate.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you.
It's great. But those rules stuck.
Wait, because otherwise they couldn't.
So, I'll look through all of it, just to, and that could appear in a few places potentially. Nice.
One thing else from council members, any comment item? Very none. Back to your next meeting. Good. We're gonna back in the agenda to the item. AP and BP 5.27, the student hall fee, and I see the Dean King is here. So let me turn it over to you, Andrew. Which would you like? Okay, there you go.
Oh, the very one. Where should I stand?
You can even be right there is fine with you.
So I'm here to present on an item that I presented at a couple of constituent groups to adopt language codifying student health fee waiver for Justice and Baptist students. My colleague may be online on Zoom, Beth Vargas.
They may chime in too.
So okay. At some point. But next slide.
I guess.
Just a little bit about our program. So we represent the Rising Scholars Program, just located right next door. We serve and support students who are justice impacted. Those are ones that are youth, adults, currently housed in juvenile hall justice. Yes, that sounds a little odd, adults in juvenile hall, but the students can be situated in that facility for up to age 25. Adults in our San Bruno and San Francisco facilities, and then our reentry students, so students who are coming out of those facilities for other facilities and coming here on campus. Next slide. To be part of the program, one has to be just a justice impact student, currently or formerly incarcerated, and involved in the juvenile or adult justice system. Two, to have at least, or be enrolled in at least units, credit or non-credit, and finally have a comprehensive ed plan. Next slide. Our mission is just to help students reach their full potential as they reach academic goals. Mantra is education, not incarceration. And again, just some of our core values. Holistic services, equity, social justice, and racial consciousness. We look through, whenever we're encountering, engaging our students in these facilities, we're looking through these lens. How do we help support? How do we help grow our student population? How do we support them with the needs, that the many needs that they have? Next slide, please. So just to give you kind of a very brief overview of the Rising Scholars Program in terms of the different sub-programs we have. So we have the Rising Scholars Center, again, here, that's next door. That's where our reentry students come. We have our Juvenile Justice Program. Again, that's just the students generally between ages 15 and 25 who are housed at Juvenile Justice Center on Woodside. And then our Five Keys program. So we offer classes to students in the men's correctional facility and the women's correctional facility. Just don't do that. So some of the guiding documents that are also guiding this conversation I'm having with you all in this presentation. So we're developing as an institution our vision 2030 plan. This is part of State Chancellor's office. We have a SIM enrollment plan that we're also developing. Our college's mission and vision statements. We have two MOUs. Most people don't realize we have MOUs with these programs, but we do. So one with our Five Keys partners that was adopted in spring 2024, and then one with our JJP partners, Juvenile Justice Department, and that was adopted this past spring. And then we have grants, again, from the state. So, which brings me hopefully to this point here, we're here now. The EDCO does not have exceptions for students who are justice impact and need a waiver for the student health fee. So there are a couple of waivers for students who rely exclusively on prayer for healing and for approved apprenticeships, but no exemption for justice impact for students. This presentation, this request that I'm asking, it's not new, it's not different. It's actually in line with some other colleges that are doing this, that have done it already. So I'm just giving you just three examples of some local community colleges that have adopted language that exempts students, justice impact students, from paying a student health fee. Next slide, please. So BP 5.27 actually specifies the student health. It is a mandatory fee, unlike the other two fees, student fees, student activity and student rec fees. Those are opt-in fees, right? Students can opt in and get opt-out too, but they opt into those fees. But the student health fee is a mandatory fee. So everyone has to pay it unless they have an exemption. Again, currently CCSF does not have an exemption policy for justice impacted students who are currently incarcerated. Yes, our students, most of them do receive a CCPG waiver, but that doesn't, they don't get any funds for the waiver of a student health fee. Yes.
Just so you know. Hmm? That is online, just so you know.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes, question?
I want to do a clarification. The student activity fee and student rep fee are not opt-in, but opt-out.
Opt-out, yes. Yes, you opt-out. Thank you for that clarification. And I think one, two, you can opt out with the form. Thank you for that correction. Next slide. And in fact, before I go any further, Yvette is online. I don't know if she can sort of introduce herself very briefly. Yvette?
Hi, how are you? My name is Yvette Vargas. I'm the director of the Juvenile Justice Program, the Rising Scholars Juvenile Justice Program. Sorry I couldn't be there in person today. Nice to meet you all. And if you have any questions, I'm also here to support and to jump in when it comes to the reentry and the youth population that we have.
Yeah. So this past September, I went before the Executive Council, Associated Students Executive Council, presented for a second read a resolution that happy to share with you all. They unanimously adopted that resolution. I went also to the Academic Senate and Executive Council, and they commended the work of the Rising Scholars Center as well as this work in terms of the student health fee waiver for justice impacted students. The proposed language I put in there is also in the resolution, which basically says, again, justice impacted students are currently housed or incarcerated in correctional facilities where CCSF classes are offered or taught. So that's the waiver for those, that particular group of students, all right? As I explained to the Executive Council members that this is specific and customized to students who are part of our institution, all right? It doesn't address other students who may be incarcerated in other facilities. Yes.
So, and I'm going to rely on other people to clarify because I'm not the boots on the ground person, but my question is about how we are using the term house and correctional facilities, because my understanding is that we may have some students who are housed in correctional facilities, but may be permitted to leave during the day and come to campus for classes and or services. And in which case, if they're accessing services on campus from the health center, would they then not qualify for this because the fee is what we rely on to provide said service at the center? So
I'll let you speak to ILC. So GAJP piece, but the five keys to this are not releasing. They are not allowed to exit the facility unless there's a court date or unless they are at that point on probation, but they are physically prohibited from leaving the facility. And that.
Yes, in the juvenile hall, we also don't have any youth that are being released to come to school. That is, some facilities are ahead, more ahead than others. So that's a secure youth treatment program, which we do have in San Francisco. Unfortunately, San Francisco probation has not created a step down program. The step down program is where it would allow a student to come to campus and take classes, but they're not at that point yet. They haven't created a program like that yet. Right now, when a youth is actually released, or when a youth is actually on campus, it's because they're released from the facility. At that point, then if the student was, let's say it's mid-semester, and the student is usually taking online classes. But if they have to, once they're released, I change everything on my end that they're formally incarcerated, not currently incarcerated. So all that changes on my end, and they would no longer be able to get a waiver for the health fee the minute that student comes to campus. But there are facilities that have stepped down. San Francisco is not one of them at this time, and we haven't received any updates as to when this will happen. But there are other facilities within the state that do have this step down program where youth are allowed to go to campus.
Yes. Just quickly, at $27, the $27 were just increased students and overwhelming, and just out of curiosity, what's the fiscal impact to ASI? How many students are we talking about?
$27 times, well, for the five keys, which are 120 students, for JJP, it varies between around 5 and 15. Correct me if I'm wrong, Yvette, but 5 and 15. So we're talking about 135 students.
So not budget,
no real impact
in some, but not
significant. Yeah,
I would say the health center has experienced quite a significant impact due to enrollment decline. So I'm not arguing that we not do this because of budget issues in the health center, but I'm just saying, do we need to have more specificity in the policy that they are sort of maybe 100% housed? Because if the student does come to campus and they're trying to utilize in-person services, that's what those fees cover, those services. So that was just trying to get clarity on which.
And just wasn't the increase, Michael, for certain reasons? I mean, that
enrollment is one, but everything is higher now. So, I mean, I do have a question, Andrew. I had my hand
up.
Sorry,
you can't see him. So step back.
Step back.
I heard you that what you guys had to say, but we have actually, when Jennifer Carlin was here, we've had students that were incarcerated that did come to campus and did access the health center because I've had to deal with them before. So I'm not for sure how that happened or what was that, but I do know that we've had a couple of students that we've helped with certain things. With one was a vaccine for HPV. I remember it very clearly, who wanted a vaccine for HPV. And I do remember him saying he was incarcerated and was on a day leave or some sort of thing. This was many years ago. This is like 7 or 8 years ago.
Is it within San Francisco County?
I have no idea. So,
yeah, that's.
But he was part of Jennifer Carlin's program because I called her. But I want to point out that, I think you're right about the language. I think because if we have students that are released and are coming on campus, we will need to know because it'll show them as a credit student, which it doesn't show this. We have a list of students who haven't paid the health fee, but if they're credit students, we assume that they have. So we would need to know that ahead of time just in case. So I'm totally for this. And I think that as long as, as the language specifies that they're incarcerated and not, not coming out, or if they are coming out, then they have the option of paying the health fee and seeing us. I think that's a good plan. Because we are seeing a lot of students from Rising Scholars already for TB testing and all kinds of stuff. So I don't want there to be any misinterpretation about when we are, because I understand it, but if the health center all of a sudden gets information that we're not seeing Rising Scholars students, that could cause some issues, because we are seeing a lot of Rising Scholars students for TB testing, volunteer student workers, and so forth. So just want to make sure that the language is very clear.
I don't know if I can quantify that in language, but I'm open to that.
I just want to say my understanding from when this resolution came to Executive Council is that this is a practice that has already been in place, and that the entire purpose of the resolution is to formalize a process and codify it so that we're in compliance and actually following through. And I remember even in conversations at the Executive Council level for us, some of what came up was how many students are we talking about, how much money, because we as students saw this as an equity issue for this particular subset of our community. And, we were even potentially exploring the possibility of whether within student funds, we needed to help support and cover the cost or that money that might be getting lost by the student health center. But my understanding at the time was that there is already something in place. It has worked, and so this is just trying to formalize that.
Yes, and that's on the next slide. That is correct.
I thought I said the hand, but that's okay. Oh wait, sorry.
Oh. Well, I was going to say something, but Heather already said it.
Okay.
Before I actually go to the next slide, this is sort of my commentary. Parenthetical commentary about the previous slide. Other institutions are doing this, so this is not a new path. Mm-hmm. But I also just want to make clear that a statutory exemption does not preclude this district from authorizing additional exemptions not listed in the statute. So the ones that are in statutes are by law required. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that we can't have additional exemptions, right? For a lot, I think a lot of misunderstanding it happens. Next slide, we'll get to a lot of what people said. Yes, we're trying to align really our institutional practices and our policies. Right now, they're kind of like we have MOUs that say we need to waive these fees, and we want to charge the students all those fees. So there's a mismatch. Just removing fiscal institutional barriers, right? On the back end, I just know that there's a lot of paperwork. I've seen it. I've talked to the staff. I've met with them. There's a lot of work that goes into just, trying not charge a student a fee. And then again, the fiscal aid, right? These are students who have no money. They're not given a lot of times money. They're given some sort of credit for in-house purchases, but they have no money. And the waiver, the California Promise waiver, only exempts them from fees, from tuition, but not for the fees. And then protecting the district, right? If we're not going to, as an institution, offer services, we shouldn't charge people. Now, granted, these students are in a particular situation, a particular circumstance,
But that circumstance does not allow them to come and access our services. We're not willing, it seems, to go there. And then just equity.
It's a willingness that I think it might be an able.
Oh, able, willing. Yeah, you may be right. Yes. Let me rephrase that. Enable. Yeah.
But also, I want to point out that the student health fee is a legislative situation where not every student is going to come to student health.
Correct.
And I want to be careful in saying it's unethical, because a lot of students call us every day and say, I'm never going to come in. I have insurance. And it's not unethical. This is something that Title V sits in it. So I don't really know if I like that statement too much.
Title V, I agree. I mean, the students are charged a fee. Now, whether they access it or not is their choice. But the point I'm trying to convey is these are students who have no choice.
Right.
They have no choice about how to access or whether they need to access it. They're denied. And then just the equity, right? Ensuring that we are, as an institution, trying to make sure that in the future that any inequities will be removed, will be addressed by codifying it. Because one administration may say, yes, we like this. Mm-hmm. Next one says, nope, we don't want this. But when it's codified in the policy, then we know it's there. And we have to follow it. So, as a final note, thank you for your time. Thank you for the support. Many of you, faculty, staff, administrators, have been supporting our Rising Scholar students. We could always use a little bit more support. funding, yes. We're moving against some of these institutional barriers. Passionate teachers, additional staff is we're working on. But we just want to just thank you for this opportunity to share our thoughts about the student health fee and the way to move forward with it for our justice impact students. Yvette, did you want to say any final words?
No, just thank you. Thank you for the support. And I'm always open if anybody has any questions or needs clarification as well.
Thank you for this. I think I just want to go back to it sounds like if there is a future where there are the much needed step down programs that Yvette talked about, that we also then consider how we support students who will be able to come on campus to access the fee, because they're still probably not much better off than, mm-hmm. you know, when they were initially incarcerated and need time to go up to that. So how might we support their ability to also mm-hmm. access fees? But right now I'm totally supportive of it.
I don't know if it's okay to add some language about the 100% burden would be incarcerated in house. I think that would add, again, because we're not trying to undermine the student health center at all, right? We do want to support it, right? And so that's why we're intentional about limiting the language, right? Because some I could show you, it's very broad. Like it could be interpreted in many different ways. But here we're saying it's these groups of students where these classes are offered at these institutions. We're trying to be very narrow and intentional. But yes, open to feedback too.
And I'm fine with that as well. I don't like the part where it's unethical if they're not. I mean, because I just don't want to open the door to other groups. I can tell you right now, I get calls all the time from students that live in Santa Rosa that are taking online classes here saying they don't want to pay the health fee. We try to explain them that this is a legislative fee. It's not about coming to student health. It's all the services we have to offer all students online. There's the online stuff that we offer. There's all kinds of things that we do. For the campus in general. And by having the health fee, that is able to do that and encompass all of the stuff that we do for the students of the entire campus. Not everyone's going to use us. So I don't like the fact that it says unethical. I get it. They can't come. And I totally agree. And I say we keep that as long as that's stated. But I want to just point out that we have to argue this point constantly with students is I have insurance. I'm never going to come. Why am I paying this? And if everyone did that, it would be an opt-out center and we wouldn't have any funds to help anyone. So this is a slippery slope. Eventually, if this was to come around for other groups saying we're not going to use this, we're out of this, we're not even in the city, we're not going to use this group of people want to they want to be out of the health fee now. So I want to be careful about how we word this.
Especially because there's so many telehealth services.
Exactly. And I get it, Andrew. They can't come because they're not able to get to the phone or telehealth service. But we offer all these services, and we're not able to do that if we don't have a strong student health fee and people utilizing and realizing that it's not just as necessary about what student health does for services, but what we provide for the entire campus all the time.
David, another question.
Oh, yeah, I was just wondering why the proposed language, why say housed, why not just say incarcerated? Incarcerated just brings up stigma sometimes. I just want to also be clear what we're also talking about too, right? So that's all. I think I saw a hand up somewhere.
Garth.
Oh, Garth. I'm sorry. I'm not exactly.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, you sure? Go ahead.
I just wasn't sure if we wanted to actually pull up the physical resolution. I know that some aspects have been mentioned as maybe needing to be reworked so that there aren't potential misunderstandings or loopholes. In terms of language, like a lot of the language I hear now regarding our students that find themselves in such situations is more so along the lines of justice impacted, system impacted. I think from what I've heard, incarcerated tends to be a more antiquated term for some of the reasons that you mentioned. So, but I think this is a very unique and specific circumstance, and not every student finds themselves in this situation. And I hear you, Michael, on what you're saying about the challenges of students, and I'm sorry that you experienced that, but I think definitely student leaders fully understand the importance of a student health center and would be more than supportive if you find yourself in such a situation to help try and build understanding about why this needs to be this way for this subset of our community. It's not the same as for anyone else.
So, did you, I double lean back to you about what your brothers are? Are you wanting to do anything to tweak the language and represent it? Or are you just wanting?
I mean, I can ponder the wording and maybe have to work with you, Kristen, on the. I mean, have a quantify. I mean, I don't want to say 100% in the wording, but the intention was that we're thinking about the context of San Francisco County, where there is no release even for a few days. So, the idea that didn't even come into our thought process that one day some will be on this program, but the vast majority still would not.
Well, this is considered a first read. You certainly have an opportunity to just bring it back to tweak language. I think you have support, so that's not the issue at all. It's not going to be like supported, but I don't know if having an opportunity to just read this bit is what's new. And then I saw another hand. Yes.
And just trying to figure out how many students it affected. You said it was about 135, but then you also said we're already waiving the fees anyways? Is that?
Well, we're not charging.
Yeah. Okay. So fiscal impact is closer to zero.
Yeah.
Right. And if I can add, we're not charging for 5 keys, but they are still being charged for the juvenile hall.
Yes.
So that's where this kind of got brought up, because the youth inside were not being excluded from this.
Yes.
And it, brought a conversation with probation and the access that, the students don't have access. But 5 keys is being, they're not being charged, but the juvenile hall youth are.
My last comment was just on the fact that very supportive. I think that's well stated. Great comments. I think the only thing I would like to see is how do we guarantee that the student $27 doesn't go up in 3-5 years because the numbers falling out. So how do we guarantee that we maintain that for the student? Because, right, it's based on cost, of course, but also
The state chancellor's office also raises it, and we we need to consider that when it does raise, we raise because of the cost of the need.
Because you're not spreading it out over, if you're going to have exemptions, especially if you got more, right? There's going to be pressure to raise that $27 of covered costs.
But it won't be generated from the pressures that emanate from here. It's statewide, the chancellor says. At this point, we're raising the, and ours on average is a lot more because we're in the Bay Area than the other, so. Even when they raise it, it's not like it's comparable, but it costs to deliver the service
here. I mean, the reason it was raised higher this last time, so many dollars, is because we hadn't raised it so long. That should not happen again. That was a big impact for students. I know that was difficult, but everything's gone up, and even tuberculin for a two-step TV, normally that used to cost maybe $10, $15. Now to do the two-step, it's like $50 a student. So that's, everyone has to have one that works on campus. So it's just a lot of money for students. And I agree. I mean, I feel like this is totally acceptable. There's some language, I think. And also, could something be changed or put in there that if students were able to have time away and that they were going to be accessing campus, that they would be able to opt in for that if they wanted to, so that we don't have to, we have a plan in place for the future if this was to happen, so that students who were to come into campus and did want to access us for whatever reason could, because we do offer these vaccines free. And that's what one of those things was, that was a big deal back then, was just that we had these these plans for these students that needed vaccine and we were able to provide it. So I'm just saying, could that be added, that if something was to change, that this would be part of it?
Yeah, great resolution. It was long overdue, like we stated at Executive Council. We're in agreement. Just the conversation that Michael has brought up right now. If a student comes in, a credit student comes in that for this reason or exemption reasons that they didn't get to paper the student health fee, what happens to that student if they try to come in?
Well, services? We have a list of students that it's mostly the religious waiver. There's not that many. So, it just shows them that they're not able to access services. That doesn't mean that they're not able to access everything else that we have to offer on campus, like the clinics, the flu clinics, and everything else, because it's not just the health services. It's our education that we do on campus. It's our classroom education that we're going into classrooms. It's a huge thing, guys. It's not just our health services. We're going into classrooms. We're doing health education. We're doing, different things in different classrooms, but also in the centers. So it's a lot of information that we put out there that the student health fee pays for. So I just want to make sure everyone knows it. So in that case, they could access those services because we don't check, but to see a nurse practitioner or someone in the health center, we would have a list and say, you actually chose to not be on, pay the health fee, so you're not, but we would need to know that if that was to change for someone that would maybe transition out of the incarceration, so that we could give them that option to pay.
And you don't turn down anybody, right? We don't.
If someone comes in, it's an emergency, we don't turn down anyone, obviously. But if someone's coming in and they want to access women's health services, and it says right there that they opted out for student health services, we're not going to be able to see them because it's a liability issue here. It's not just student health. It's not just the fee. It's a legislative thing that pays for the liability of the clinic, the school, everything. So there's a huge stack of things that we're talking about here with student health fee. It's not just what everyone thinks, that it's a physical presence in the student health and a nurse and me and everyone else that works there. It's everything that encompasses on campus,
and that's good to know, right? Because the everyday student is not going to know anything that you just mentioned aside from what they see within this structure, right? And so it kind of gives me a sense that it's the same way for non-credit students.
Non-credit students comes in, it's pretty easy because it shows them actually a non-credit. We don't necessarily see a non-credit, so.
Now, this also starts another conversation of where else can we get funding outside of the student health fee, right? As an institution, mm-hmm. as a district, the responsibilities that we have to make sure that we put you know, the everyday let's put the student first. How can we address the let's put the student first by providing the resources that we need for the students, student health, and everything that the student health offers? It's one of the, it would be a priority.
Well, if Free City had paid for the health fee, that would have been very good help for all students, because we're talking about students of all, we have in-house students that have no money to pay the health fee, but they still have to pay it. That's just the way it is here. So
I'm going to pause this just quickly because we've exceeded time for this item. I'll certainly entertain a motion, but I think we're at a point where the guidance we're giving is maybe go back and see if there's a tweak that you would recommend to the language and then bring it.
Okay. I'll work with the student leaders here and Kristen.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
And then we'll see you back here for the second read at our next meeting. That's okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Discussion. Thank you for that. All right, we are at the point in our agenda where I should ask if there were public comment on that item, even though we had quite a bit of commentary, but just want to close the loop. See any hands raised in our case? Okay, so we're going to move on to our final new business item, the Diligent platform rollout. And Stephen Chmielewski is here, our board liaison officer.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, wonderful. Knock on wood that everything continues to cooperate. Yes. Thank you very much, Vice Chancellor Cooper Wilkins, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm here briefly just to announce the Diligent rollout update. This is just to make sure that the campus community and anybody that has utilized board docs in the past is aware of the upcoming changes. So I'd like to share some of those updates, but first I'm going to just share brief information on Diligent. Diligent's going to be the new platform being adopted by the City College of San Francisco, and that's going to replace Board Docs for managing all board-related activities. Just a little bit about its background. It's a secure cloud-based system designed to streamline various functions. Those functions include preparation and the distribution of board meeting agendas. We also cover document sharing and collaboration, voting and resolutions management, which I found to be rather interesting. That will, of course, come later down the road once all people have become fully familiar with the system itself and how to operate the platform. And then, of course, archival of past meetings and materials. There's been a lot of back and forth and a lot of feedback going, are we still going to be able to manage, you know, certain resolutions and action items, and are we going to be able to pull these items? Yes, everything will in fact be migrated over, which is wonderful. And I'm going to get to that a little bit later in the presentation. But as far as user activation status, I am pleased to report that all users that were previously using Board Docs and any new employees, such as myself and any others, have now been migrated from Board Docs over to the Diligent system, and everyone has completed that registration step. So that was a huge accomplishment, and specifically, you know, time oriented. So I want to thank everyone for taking the time to complete that. And it definitely does mark a huge important milestone in the transition process. Also, I do want to note, this is for VCs, AVCs, et cetera. If you have a staff member that will require the use of Diligent that does not have access to Board Docs, for instance, please reach out to me following this meeting to ensure that those people do in fact get registered and that they're activated in the system. I'll move into rollout timeline and transition. I will be quick. October 9th board meeting. That's obviously the Board of Trustees. That's going to be the Committee of Whole meeting. We will continue to use Board Docs for this meeting. It will not be until the week of October 13th, which is what Aurel pointed out earlier, that Board Docs will officially be discontinued. So once the week of the 13th, Diligent's going to perform what they call the final migration. During that time, no one's going to be able to get into Board Docs. So whatever is posted and published already, come that week, the week of October 13th, all of that information will migrate over. However, I do want to know, very important to note, is if there's anything in board docs that has not been posted or published, it's not going to migrate over. So just keep that in mind moving forward. So again, October 13th, the week of October 13th, that will all start taking place. To make sure I'm on track here, I guess we can move into next steps. So if you're responsible, Aurel kind of pointed on this before, if you're responsible for any meetings requiring an agenda during the week of October 13th, please contact me after this meeting so that we can coordinate possibly the creation of a template within Diligent so that we both can work together to get that up and running for you. I don't want to pause anybody's work. So we're going to try to keep this as streamlined as possible. And then to support that and allow for training and familiarity with the new platform, I have taken the liberty and I have volunteered myself to manage the agenda creation and item postings. So of course, anybody could try to do that for the board meeting on October 23rd, but to streamline it and make it a little bit more efficient and less, less of a hassle, I decided to take that on. So if there will be items that you will be posting for the, or would like to post, I should say, to the agenda for October 23rd, please have these to me by end of business day, October 15th, which I believe is a Wednesday. That will ensure that I have enough time to get that, you know, to my desk, to the chancellor's desk, and have it reviewed with the chancellor to be reviewed with the board president and vice president. And then, of course, moving forward, all users who review, submit, and post to agendas will be responsible for doing so come the November 6th meeting. Keep in mind, there's only one meeting in November as well as December. So that's about it. I feel long-winded. there's some training materials attached to the agenda itself. Feel free to go through those. That's what Diligent calls the 101s. That'll give you specific background information, as well as support on how to proceed with certain things. And there's also training videos, et cetera. If you need any additional support, feel free to reach out to me. I will do my best to answer those questions. If I cannot answer those questions, I will put you in contact or get into contact of the Diligent Customer Service Success Manager. But yeah, thank you again for your time, your cooperation, flexibility during this rollout. It's all new to everyone, so we'll all support and help each other.
Thank you, Stephen.
You're welcome.
I'm just going to pause here to see if folks have questions. And do go ahead, Councilmember DeLogos, and then Councilmember
Collins. Do you happen to know how long we have used board docs for?
The timeline since we started?
Yeah,
I don't know that. I don't have the answer to that question. I can attempt to find out for you.
I think it's about five years, 2018.
I just want to point out also that board docs is Diligent. So Diligent basically is board docs. It's kind of vice versa. Board docs merged with Diligent, which is the same platform, more or less. This one's just a little bit more in depth and definitely has more features, which is going to keep things definitely more transparent and by far more organized. So it is the hope that it's going to create better efficiency, communication, and transparency.
You have another question here? Go ahead.
Will you be able to show us the demo version? Like Vice Chairman? See it?
I'm so sorry, I didn't hear.
Will you be able to share with us the demo version you have on the computer? Let's share so you can see how it looks like.
Oh, sure. I can pull it up quickly. Hang on just a moment. My screen is going to be a little bit different than other people's user screens, just because I deal exclusively with the board. So I don't know if it's going to be a excellent lesson in seeing things, but I'll try to keep it as streamlined as possible. Can everyone see the screen?
Not yet.
Okay.
It's coming.
There you go.
Okay.
You see it?
It's loading.
You just let me know when you can.
What it looks like. Unless this is what it looks like.
There we go.
Okay, beautiful. So this is how the page will look. Like for the public, when the public comes, they'll see, okay, you go to the calendar. They're going to see October 9th. We click on the 9th. They're going to see Board of Trustees Committee of the Whole meeting. Now, I haven't posted that on there because we'll still be using Board Docs, but people can come to the site, see the agenda, be able to actually request public comment if they want to, et cetera, et cetera. So it keeps everything organized. I've got our social media on here, recent meeting. I'm sorry?
Sorry, there's just a lot of excitement in the room, but go ahead.
Oh, it is. It seems, I mean, I'm not an aficionado on this by any means. I mean, I just kind of took this on stepping into the role, but it seems like a really, really nifty system.
Yeah.
So you're saying we'll be able to request a public comment on this website?
I believe so, yes. I'm still learning on it, so I don't want to be held to like, oh, here it is, right here, request to speak.
Great.
If you have a request to speak, I already put this information in, so you just go ahead and it puts in conf. It's really, really nifty.
When's it go
on?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So David had a question, and then Cynthia wants to get back to
the question. I was just going to make a comment. They made the clue saving company. It was more of a, they got bought out.
Yeah.
We didn't have a choice to get rid of Board Docs, but we had this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something with the community college. I believe it was the coalition. I'm not sure exactly the title of, but it wasn't, again, don't quote me on this. It wasn't a mandate, but it was basically deemed that everyone follow suit. So that's how that came about.
I was just going to say, you're talking about the CCLC, the Community College League of California.
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Which some of us will be attending in November.
I think it looks absolutely wonderful, Stephen. Thanks for all the work in it that you put into it. I would double check the accessibility of that red. Just having done a lot of work in Canvas, it looks like it might not meet the accessibility requirements. And I'm sure you're also going to run that through an accessibility checker, like a screen reader.
Are you referring to the web page?
Yeah, the page that you showed. That red is not accessible.
Sorry,
whereabouts?
The red banners.
All of them?
Yes.
Should be a light pole.
That's not.
It doesn't.
You can email me and I can tell you the code.
Sure. And who am I? I'm so sorry. Who am I speaking
this
with?
This is Cynthia.
Oh, hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Stephen.
Yeah, I will email you to see what you're referring to.
Okay. Sorry, I lost track of hands. I see Michael's. Does somebody else have a hand up?
Sorry.
Okay, go ahead. Oh, you did. Okay, so Heather and Michael.
I just wanted to say, I think there's a style guide on the website that's a great insight. Thank you for providing that, because that's not something I would have necessarily thought about, but that totally makes sense.
Design assets page of the website has the style guide and the color codes and all of that.
I can show that to Cynthia for making that as
well. Okay. And Mike did.
Stephen Michael Snyder, I just have a question. Some of our older faculty and staff that aren't that computer savvy and want to make comments still and so forth, they're still going to be able to come up and get a card?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Public comment cards will absolutely still be at the desk where I'd be sitting. So feel free to just have them come on up if there's any questions.
Any
you can address that. That's not going to change.
Any other questions for Stephen?
Yes.
Stephen, so people that do public comment, all they have to do is that form online. They no longer have to email public comments at ccsf.edu.
They can do that, or they can do the public comment. I'm still working on that section because we have yet to roll out an official, board agenda posting from Diligent. So I'm still working out those logistics. I would say for this purposes, continue to do what was being done before. And as it's rolled out and people become familiar with it, I will change the language, but it'll take some time to roll out the process.
Thank you.
And once we have the official, the official agenda is published. But I have taken the liberty of creating, I can quickly show you some templates. So these are some of our meeting templates. Just for instance, creating that, the agenda document, adding our logo in there, if you can still see the screen, of course. So all of that is populated in there for various meetings, such as the trustees meetings, PGC, which we're currently on. And then, of course, there's also, if I can find the thing, just give me a second. Public site, public request to speak. So I've put in our procedure for public comment to include the written and in-person request as well as our decorum notice. And then it looks like, again, this is a lot of this will still be, in function and experimental once we start moving with it. But if somebody is to email, they would get a response email, as you can see on the screen, request to speak approved. And it automatically generates a nice little email to them, very basic. And then, provides specific details.
So I was going to ask if there's can you submit public comment on there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I know it said request to speak, but I wasn't sure if you can, actually put your public comment on there.
Oh, like written?
Yeah.
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 Oh, you mean like the actual?
Yeah. The word. Like to be read as the thing, Does that work or not?
I haven't tested that out yet. Again, I think a lot of that has to do with once everything gets up and running and it's published, I think we'll have more information, but I'll look into it. I'll check it out.
Yeah, it would be great if it does.
Yes.
Because we do allow for written public comment in addition to speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I said earlier, I think it'll help keep things a lot more organized. And I'll even say, even since I started this position, there was one time where I actually missed a public comment because of the delay of email. So with that said, if somebody's able to just go straight to the public website, put that information in, it makes it more efficient for, I think, everybody involved.
Sorry, I just wanted to ask while we're on this, if that 239 number is still working, because I know there have been problems in the past with people trying to make public comments in that way.
239-3556?
Yes. Is that an active line? Is that still an option for people?
It is. It is. And okay. I just discovered actually while I was waiting to speak, it's interesting enough that email gets forwarded to Mary Grace Esteban, and I have since requested to be added to that forwarding list. So if somebody is to call, I'm going to, of course, follow up, but ensure that I'm on that forwarding so that if there's any voicemails that are left with information, I have a way of getting back to them.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Mailbox.
He's testing it.
So did he apply for EGC as well?
Yes.
So the public comment also work for EGC as well?
It will work that way because we'll try to be consistent how we use it across. We'll encourage people to email in advance, but they can always show up or be online and use that feature.
So be basically for PTC and for only for two.
Eventually, we're encouraging the standing committees to adopt using this platform as well. And then you have other Brown Act buddies that also may want to adopt it. So
that's what I was asked. The committee.
Just as a point of clarification, sorry, Dr. Google, about what you're speaking on. But if somebody wanted to submit a written public comment for participatory governance council, they would not use public comment at ccsf.edu or that phone number.
No,
it would be something specific.
So, yeah, and as Stephen mentioned, he's demoing what it looks like as a board right now, and then we'll be setting up when it
begins. Yeah, it's one of that
PGC specific. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're taking it slow for a variety of factors, just to make sure that everyone kind of keeps up at the same pace, so to speak, especially the board members. They do, in fact, reference materials currently on board docs during board meetings. So it's going to be important that, you know, they get transitioned. They're aware of how certain things work. But I will make it a point to either today or tomorrow to look into that. Public comment inquiries and see what I can get set up on the back end.
Thank you. One more question.
Sure.
So this one right now is for staff to relay a call and then use the service, like to relay an agenda or something like that, right? But you said eventually we want to adopt, like the student council also want to adopt this one. So do we have the staff account and ccsf.edu?
I can answer that. That's a good question.
That is a good
question. Well, Vice Chancellor, I'm sorry. I didn't hear the question
about, there was a question about if, because we have additional Brown Act bodies like our associated students, you may want to adopt this in the future. And sometimes there is challenges with access because their email accounts are formatted differently. And so something for us to explore how to overcome that is a challenge to accessing this particular tool. Like it's currently with Microsoft Teams, say for instance, if we want to add students to a Teams folder to collaborate, we've got to get them a special email account in order to do that. So anyway,
really?
So
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. So just something, I'm glad the question was asked. We can start exploring that now.
Okay. I'm assuming that's because the @student.ccsf.
Yeah.
Okay. I will ask that question.
Great. Is there any public comment on this item? Not seeing any questions in our attendee gallery. All right. Well, thank you so much, Stephen. We appreciate you coming to share this and entertain all our questions.
Of course. Of course. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you, Stephen.
All right. Bye-bye now. You're welcome.
Glad to have you.
Thank you.
All right. Now we are going to don't have any reports this meeting. But again, we have sent out a request to all of our standing committees requesting that they be prepared to provide, if they haven't already, an update on their 24-25 outcomes and their ability last year to address those. And at this point, some of them are working on their 25-26. So when they come, they may be doing the both and. So we should have a starting next meeting, regular updates from our committees happening in the standing committee report items. Yes.
And the committee descriptions and purposes.
Yes, committee descriptions and purposes. I have been addressing updates to those as well. Yeah. So. All right, and as you can see on our list of future agenda items, we have multiple requests for items, but also things that are going to be coming forward in future meetings. But if you all have additional future agenda items that you'd like to shout out now, folks online can put them in the chat, where you are always welcome to put them in our PVC email account, ideally a week before our meetings, and a little bit more even before that, because our PGC agenda review committee would love to know what those are. And I saw me. Yes.
Yeah, there are a couple things. Thank you for the future agenda item on legislation compliance oversight, because I think that's broader and more overarching than just focusing on one particular piece of legislation. And as a part of that, I think specifically about AB 2033 and AB 2881, because I think our website with regard to Title IX is not necessarily in compliance either. But I know that we also don't have a Title IX officer at this time. We just have people who are standing in to do that work in the meantime. I do want to say, well, I guess I'll save it for when we actually do talk about the naming proposal, because some things have come up on the student side. In relation to why it's just an area within a building and not an entire building being named after this particular individual, as has been done with other individuals. So, and then aside from that, I think I mentioned earlier just a standing item for AB 2449, so that if anybody does need to use just cause or extenuating circumstances.
So two things. One, definitely we'll address that. We also didn't put the fact that we're bringing back the student employment back, because there were specific questions, so we will add that.
Thank you.
And it's come up in multiple places where we have folks trying to provide information so we can come back with a comprehensive update. I'll probably lean on ABC Charles for this. So we actually have naming that happens not just for buildings, but parts of buildings and things around the campus. So it isn't just limited, flex on various things. So it isn't just limited to buildings, but I think the rationale for the committee, we can bring that back as well as a part of it. So we certainly can do that. And that was all I wanted to say. So thank you for your feedback. You have seen some things that have been in this list. But certainly if there are any other future agenda items folks want to recognize at this time, and again, you're always welcome to send those in advance. Thank you for hands raised in the audience. I don't see it, which means, go ahead.
I mean, it's something I kind of had a question about. I don't know if it should be better for facilities, but just kind of an update on all our property stuff. What's up with Off Street? What's up with downtown?
We did request facilities to make an update today, but since they weren't ABC Best Kids wasn't available to do it, we can certainly add that to our request when he makes this update for his facilities. Happy to do that.
Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Seconded enthusiastically. So with that, we are adjourned by consensus and by
great job.
Well, it was really helpful. Thank you.